The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio coming up.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Today's show is the first of a two-part series about the issue of nuclear power and its relation to the climate crisis. Is nuclear power a truly viable alternative to fossil fuels, or, as its critics maintain, is it neither practical nor safe? We plan to interview both defenders and opponents of the use of this form of energy. Today we will be speaking with Mari Inouye, an attorney and co-founder of the Manhattan Project for a Nuclear-Free World, an organization that opposes both nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. We plan to broadcast in the near future a second interview to present the other side of this issue. Interviewing Ms. Inouye will be Jack Baldwin, a member of Extinction Rebellion New York City, who has been involved with this show since its inception. Take a listen.
This is Jack Baldwin of Extinction Rebellion Radio. Today I'm speaking with Mari Inouye. Mari is a co-founder of the organization Manhattan Project for a Nuclear-Free World, which was founded in New York City in March 2012, so it's celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. On the organization's Facebook page, it says that it is, quote, a group of concerned citizens, educators, health advocates, artists, and lawyers with a mission to raise awareness of the costs, risks, and humanitarian consequences of nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. In the interest of full disclosure, I'd like to add that I also serve as a volunteer for the Manhattan Project. Good afternoon, Mari.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for inviting me to your radio show. It's a great honor to be here.
Thanks. First, tell us about the name of your group, Manhattan Project for a Nuclear-Free World. How did you come up with the name, and what does it signify?
Yeah, so in March 2012, when we got together with about a dozen of representatives of civil society groups and grassroots groups, we did this brainstorming session, trying to think what would be the best name to represent our group. And we chose the name Manhattan Project to remind ourselves that we first met in Manhattan. And also we have this mission to undo the unconscionable labors of the original Manhattan Project that unleashed nuclear weapons and nuclear energy upon the world. And we think that you know, a lot of young generation do not know about the original Manhattan Project. So we believe that our name is a teachable moment to young generations.
Uranium is a finite resource, just like oil and coal are. So even if you could use it safely, it would eventually run out.
Well, you know, how do you define safe? I don't see any, you know, safety measures properly provided here in the U.S. I don't think it's safe. Starting from the beginning of the nuclear energy program, which is mining uranium, which, first of all, is an extractive industry like other fossil fuel industry. You cannot mine uranium without sacrificing the land and the people of near the uranium mines. And quite often, those uranium mines are located in indigenous lands. Not just here in the U.S., but a majority of uranium mines worldwide are located in indigenous lands. And their lands, their people, their resources, their faith were sacrificed for the nuclear industry. And their lands were used as sacrifice zones. So uranium mines contaminates the land, contaminates their water, their food, and their people, and that is impacting the local residents, the health of the local residents. So starting from, you know, just the first step of the nuclear energy program, nuclear energy is not safe. And there are other issues associated with the operation of the nuclear power plant. And also, what are we going to do with the radioactive waste? We don't even have a proper, you know, nuclear waste policies here that will help us away from the any danger. So there are a lot of issues that we need to discuss.
So I was just getting to those questions. Can you give us specific examples of dangerous nuclear power plants that have been in operation in the past or may still be in operation today?
Yeah. So one of the, you know, well-known examples might be Chernobyl disaster and Fukushima nuclear disaster. Fukushima nuclear disaster happened in March 2011. A lot of people think that it's something that happened in the past, but actually it's an ongoing crisis. Radiation is still released into the environment, into the air, into the land, into the Pacific Oceans. Three nuclear reactors had a meltdown, and we don't even know how to deal with the damaged nuclear reactors and the very radioactive core that melted down. Also, Japan now has like more than 1.28 million metric tons of radioactive wastewater stored in the damaged nuclear facility in Fukushima. And Japan recently, about a year ago in April 2021, they decided to dump this wastewater into the Pacific Ocean starting from 2023. And it could last for the next decades. It could be more than 30 years. So nuclear disaster, once it happens, it will stay danger for decades, and we don't even know how to deal with this.
I'd like to talk about something a little close to home, like the Indian Point nuclear power plant, which was decommissioned quite recently. Could you elaborate on that? It's close to New York, where we are.
Yeah. So when Fukushima nuclear disaster happened in 2011, Indian Point nuclear power plant had two nuclear reactors that were operated. It's located about 25 miles north of the northern border of New York City. It's in the Westchester County. You might think that it's kind of far away from, you know, midtown New York City, but actually it's only 19 miles from this reservoir, the water reservoir, which is in Westchester County. And it's, you know, that water reservoir is used by New York City residents. So nuclear pipeline is actually closer than we think. And Indian Point was so close, and more than 20 people live, work, or play within the 50 miles radius from the Indian Point nuclear power plant. And people raise questions.
How many people did you say?
20 million.
20 million.
Yes, within the 50 miles radius. And yes. I'm using this 50 miles radius because after the Fukushima disaster, United States State Department and Nuclear Regulatory Commission recommended U.S. citizens in Japan to evacuate from the 50 miles radius from the Fukushima Daiichi power plant. So 50 miles a radius was used in a case of a severe nuclear disaster. But actually in Indian Point, they didn't have that kind of evacuation plans in place. They don't even still do. So local people and people in New York City raised awareness. And finally, in 2017, I believe in January, governor announced that they decided to shut down Indian Point. And in April 2020, one reactor was shut down. And last year in April, the last nuclear reactor was shut down. So finally, no nuclear reactor is currently operating at Indian Point, which is amazing.
Yes, but of course, there are a lot of other nuclear reactors throughout the country.
Yes.
Can you elaborate more about the problem of nuclear waste and how or if this problem can be solved?
Yeah. So, you know, since you mentioned about Indian Point, let me talk about current issue here in New York City related to radioactive waste. So, when you operate a nuclear power plant, they use this nuclear fuel, which is made from uranium. Sometimes they use mixed fuel with uranium and plutonium. But this spent nuclear fuel is extremely radioactive, and that has to be stored in a storage pool in the facility. And after that, it has to be moved to the dry cask. And this cask needs to be stored somewhere, but there is no plan in place right now in New York City. And there is a plan that they're going to put that in the barge and move to the port in New Jersey, down the Hudson River and go to New Jersey and send it to the interim storage site, maybe in Texas or in New Mexico, and later to a permanent repository place, which is not yet determined. But that requires so much risk associated with the transportation of highly radioactive waste, because, you know, the more you transport highly radioactive waste, there may be another accident, you know, by train, by barge, or by car. And, you know, think about it, like, you know, every year there is so many car accidents, train accidents, fires everywhere in this country, anywhere. So we have not discussed, I don't think the local residents had an opportunity to share their concerns about the transportation, storage, and management of highly radioactive waste coming out from decommissioning power plant. And also decommissioning comes with the dealing with the building, dismantling the buildings that are highly radioactive. And that could associate with the another release of vapor or debris that are highly radioactive, and that could impact the local communities. So local stakeholders, frontline communities, they should be provided a fair opportunities to share their concerns in a public hearing so that these concerns will be raised instead of private company deciding what to do with this highly radioactive stuff.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. This week, Jack Baldwin is interviewing Mari Inoue, co-founder of the Manhattan Project for a Nuclear-Free World. Now, back to their conversation.
And also there's a problem that, you know, even if it's safely transported and buried, it remains radioactive for so long. You know, how do you warn people over the course of centuries and eons that they should not go near the site, that they should not dig into the site? You know, that's a problem too.
Yeah, that's a problem as well. But an imminent problem is that these communities that are planned to be stored this kind of highly radioactive toxic waste are quite often indigenous communities and communities of color. And this undermines democracy. Like these communities already suffered from uranium minings or other nuclear programs such as nuclear testing. And they shouldn't be used as sacrifice zones once again by the nuclear industry. It's an environmental justice issue.
Yes. Many conservatives and even some environmental activists, most notably the distinguished scientist James Hansen, have strongly advocated for nuclear power, either as part of a permanent solution to our modern energy problems, or at least a temporary but necessary part of a planned transition to completely renewable energy sources. What is the Manhattan Project's position on this?
Well, I disagree. We disagree. We think that there are other options just by using renewables. For example, let me give you an example. Mark Jacobson, he's a professor at Stanford University. He advocates that it is possible to transition to 100% renewable using solar, wind, and water electricity and heat for all energy purposes. And he explains that in website. I can send you the link later.
Yes.
And he says that, you know, using 100% clean renewable energy source will result in 60% lower energy costs per year, 90% lower social costs, 4 million more long-term full-time jobs than lost, less land use, more energy security, 78,000 fewer air pollution deaths per year, and zero climate emissions from energy, which is amazing statistics. Why not we advocate for 100% renewables as transition?
When disasters like Fukushima happened, people suddenly become very interested in the problems of nuclear power. Yet after a while, interest recedes, thanks in part to the news media losing interest. How do you and your allies in the movement try to maintain people's focus on the nuclear issue during such times?
Well, we have to be resilient. We have to continue talking about the truth, the costs, risks, and humanitarian consequences of nuclear energy. I like to emphasize, since I mentioned about the Fukushima disaster, after the Fukushima disaster, more than 160,000 residents were forced to evacuate, and still, 10 years have passed, but still tens of thousands of people are still displaced, still struggling. And they face many challenges, including housing, jobs, psychological trauma, and so on. You know, we have to talk about this, continue talking about this. And media quite often is not fair, because I remember reading this that Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, he's been spending hundreds of millions of dollars to in a support of mainstream media because he wanted to promote so-called small modular reactors, which is another, you know, disaster, which is very slow and it has a proliferation risk. It's not a solution to climate change at all, but, you know, someone like him is spending hundreds of millions of dollars to influence what the media is saying. And, you know, we are just people, but, you know, we fight for environmental justice. We continue to talk about this issue through like radio like this. And I hope that our listeners will, you know, share this information to their friends, colleagues, and, you know, members of communities so that we can say no to nuclear energy.
I have a couple more questions. You mentioned Fukushima. Are there videos available that can give people more information about what happens, you know, in a nuclear disaster so that they have a better idea of the dangers involved?
Yeah. Starting from about 4 years ago, we started this video projects, sharing the video testimonies of Fukushima evacuees or those who still live in Fukushima. They share their concerns. They share their experiences, their struggles. And those video testimonies are available at our YouTube channel. So go to youtube.com and Google Manhattan Project for Nuclear Free World and you will find our channel. And we have some testimonies from people talking about their concerns against the Japan's recent plan to dump radioactive water into the Pacific. We also have testimonies from the young members of the Pacific nations who raised concerns, similar concerns against Japan's plan because they were heavily impacted by the residual radiation exposure from the nuclear testing, also from climate change, as well as the generational trauma. And dumping radioactive wastewater into the Pacific is another modern day nuclear colonialism using Pacific Ocean as a sacrifice zone. So we should listen to those who are raising, who are courageous enough to talk about their concerns.
My final question is, do you see the nuclear issue as separate or do you see it as intersecting other important issues? I mean, not just climate change, but issues of, for example, social justice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned about the, intersectionality between nuclear energy and climate change, climate crisis. Maybe I can elaborate a little bit more, like because of the all these extreme weather situation, nuclear power plants is now more dangerous when there is a storm and other extreme weather. So we have to pay close attention to what's going on in nuclear power plants, especially after this, you know, heavy snowfall or heavy storm or earthquakes that could impact on the safety of the plant. And it's not like, those switch in home. You cannot just turn off nuclear power plants because those radioactive, reaction will continue even though we don't want them to. And that could lead to criticality, that could lead to hydrogen explosions, and later that could lead to a severe nuclear accident, like what happened in Fukushima. And no one wants to have the kind of disaster here in New York, not in, you know, Indian Point, where 20 million people live or work within 50-mile radius. How are we going to evacuate them to safe location? Do we have second home? Like, you know, if we don't have second home, what are we going to do? Like, do we have enough savings to fly to Europe? Or, you know, think about it. And always nuclear accident like this disproportionately impacts people with limited resources, yeah. Women and children. And we have so many immigrants here in New York City. And how are we going to convey the danger of nuclear energy in their languages so that they can fully understand the consequences of such, you know, accident? Like, it's so difficult. And the only way, the key is prevention.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. This week, Jack Baldwin is interviewing Mari Inoue, co-founder of the Manhattan Project for a Nuclear-Free World. Now, back to their conversation.
All right. You have a website, so I would appreciate it if you would give the URL for your website to share with our listeners so that they can find out more about this issue.
Yeah. So the website is mp-nuclear-free.com. So you can see some of the materials that we put together. We have some, for example, letter that we submitted to the Japanese government last year asking them to help their decision to dump radioactive water into the Pacific, which was endorsed by more than 70 U.S. groups. We also have other material that we prepared about a couple of years ago about how nuclear energy undermines democracy. And it's a flyer written in English and Spanish. Hopefully people can take a look at it and distribute it to your friends.
So thank you very much for being part of our show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Kenny of Everything Old is New Again every Sunday night at 10. Please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again, because everything old is new again. I like it.
Check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing.
Testing.
Tune in to Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright on Tuesday, March 29th at 9 p.m. will be joined once more by filmmaker Rosemary Reed, director of Playing in the FM Band, The Steve Post Story, to discuss two of her films on the accomplishments of women in science, The Path to Nuclear Fission, the story of Lisa Meitner and Otto Hahn, and Out from the Shadows, the story of Irene Joliot-Curie and Frederick Joliot-Curie.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Wait a minute, the cats drink coffee?
Yeah, if you give it to them with a little tuna fish sandwich.
Ooh, sounds good.
This is not a Republican issue. This is not a Democrat issue. This, my good friends, is an American issue.